through the permission and blessings of all the devotees, try to share some thoughts on this verse here. Of course, here this is this chapter. We're understanding that Hiranyaksha has been killed, and his brother Hiranyakashipu is making all attempts and plans to get his own back. And so he's instructing all his different demoniac friends and relatives to create destruction and havoc in the whole world. So here Prabhupada is talking something very strong. Of course, it's said that the Vaishnava is harder than a thunderbolt and at the same time softer than a rose. Both sides are there in the character of a Vaishnava. Sometimes the Vaishnava will speak very harshly and sometimes very sweetly. Both are there. And here Prabhupada is speaking very strongly against modern science. Prabhupada is saying modern science, the scientific world, is basically exemplifying envy. Envy against the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we know in many instances Prabhupada spoke out very heavily against science. One time the devotees came to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, the scientists, they say that we have evolved from monkeys. Prabhupada said, where is the question of evolving from monkeys? I say they are still monkeys. And then they said, no, Prabhupada, they've got the theory all right, they've just got a few missing links that they have to work out. Prabhupada said, this is all nonsense, there's no missing links, the only missing link is my foot in their face. The Prabhupada was very, very heavy, incredibly heavy. He said, they say there is nothing after this life. They say it's void, there's nothing after this life. But I say there's the only place where there's nothing is in between their ears. So Prabhupada was very incredibly heavy against the scientific world who tried to take God out of the picture. Very, very heavy. Of course, the other side of the Vaishnava's preaching is not to speak so harshly, but also to speak very sweetly. In many instances, Prabhupada also spoke very sweetly about the scientists, that they have discovered so much. They're very intelligent also. They've discovered all these different ways, and even we are utilizing this technology, so they must have some brain. That brain is coming from Krishna. And in this way, Prabhupada would also commend the scientists for what they had done. But he would say all the scientific discoveries are like many, many zeros. But when you add Krishna, when they understand that sarvakaranikaranam, the ultimate cause of everything, behind everything, is Krishna, is God, then that's like the one in front of the many, many zeros, and those many, many zeros then become a huge number, something very, very significant. So like this, Prabhupada was always trying to expose this kind of scientific, I guess you could say arrogance. There's a kind of scientific arrogance that we now know everything about the world. You know, the theories of evolution, Big Bang, they're taught as undisputable facts in schools, colleges, universities, all across the world. But Prabhupada was said, actually they haven't discovered anything. After all their research, they have come to the wrong conclusion. It's like someone was telling me this story, that there was a PhD, okay, and he was studying how spiders react to instructions. They find all kinds of subject matters to study. Anyway, so this scientist or this PhD, he put this spider down and he kind of shouted to the spider, move, move, move. And as soon as he did that, the spider moved. So then part of his research, then what he did is he took one leg off the spider. Obviously he wasn't a very non-violent person, but he took one leg off the spider. So now the spider had three legs left and he said, move, move, move. So sure enough, the spider moved. Maybe a little slower, but the spider moved. Then he took another leg off. So now the spider had two legs and he said, move, move, move. And the spider moved, this time even slower. So now he took one more leg off. And he shouted to the spider, "Move, move, move." And to his amazement, the spider carried on. It hopped, so it moved. Then he took the final leg off the spider, and he said, "Move, move, move." And the spider didn't move. And then he analyzed the whole situation. Then he came up with his PhD thesis, and he came to the conclusion. He said, "We have made an amazing discovery that when you take all the legs off the spider, simultaneously it becomes deaf." Understand the point. They do all the analysis, they research everything, but then at the end they come to the completely opposite conclusion. It's not that the spider has become deaf. Baba, it has no legs. It can't move, even if it did hear you. Right? Very simple. For Prabhupada said, modern science is like this. They discover so many intricacies of the universe around us and everything, but at the end they come to the wrong conclusion. There's no God. Prabhupada said, this is ridiculous. You have to understand also that sometimes we think, well, maybe scientists, they're not so bad. I mean, there's serial killers out there. There are people who are doing, you know, terrible things. I mean, the scientists, what are they doing? So they're making a few experiments in their laboratories. I mean, there's worse people in the world. But the Gita explains that this kind of scientific mentality of taking God out of the picture is actually the most dangerous. More dangerous than anything. In the 16th chapter of the Gita, Krishna says, Asatyam apatistam te jagat ahur anishwaram aparas parasam bhutam kim amyat kamahaitukam. Krishna is explaining the mentality of the atheist. Asatyam. They believe this world is asatyam. It's not real. It's just temporary. It's come about. It doesn't really have any real purpose. Asatyam apratistam. There's no purpose to it. There's no foundation to it. And jagat ahur anishwaram. Anishwaram. There's no God in control of this universe. There's no one behind it. It's come about by chance and it will leave by chance. This is the mentality of the atheistic person. But then in the next verse, Krishna explains why this is so dangerous. Krishna says, Etam drishtim avashtabhya. Nashtat mano alpa buddhaya. Prabhavantir ugar karmana. Kshayaya jagato hita. Krishna says, Etam drishtim avashtabhya. Endowed with such a vision, endowed with such a philosophy. Nashtat mano alpa buddhaya. Nashta atma. They're lost to themselves. Like sometimes we say, this person has lost their mind. That's what Krishna is saying about the atheistic person. Nashta atma. They've lost their mind. They have no intelligence. Alpa buddhaya. Krishna says it nicely. He says, alpa buddhaya. They have very small intelligence. Basically, he's saying, they don't know anything. But Krishna is saying it nicely. They have very small intelligence. Like Prabhupada would say, the scientists have a poor fund of knowledge. Basically, he's saying they're completely ignorant, but he says they have a poor fund of knowledge. So like this is what Krishna is saying. Alpa Buddha. And then Krishna says, Prabhavantyugra karmana. They engage in ugra karma, terrible works. Kshayaya jagato hita, which will ultimately destroy the entire universe. And Prabhupada is making this point here that these scientists, they will actually destroy the universe by their nuclear weapons. Nuclear, this is very clearly explained here. So basically the modern world based around science is taking God out of the picture. And you see it, you go out on book distribution, you go out and just speak to people, God is out of the picture basically. And people have some warped ideas about, you know, what the purpose of life is and whether God exists or not. Many people just don't believe in God anymore. Just like I was walking down the street and this person had this t-shirt and it said, I used to be an atheist. And then he walked past me and then I saw the back of the t-shirt and then it said, until I realized I was God. So some people think they are God. Some people think everyone is God. Some people think important personalities are God. Isn't it like in India you see these big billboards, Sachin is our God and cricket is our religion. Right? People worship sports people. They have temples for Bollywood actors. This is going on. It's real. Yeah. And it's not only in the East, in India, it's in the whole, even great philosophers of our time like Friedrich Nietzsche. Isn't it? God is dead. And that was his famous statement. God is dead. I saw this picture of a New York wall, and it had Nietzsche's thing printed on it. It said, God is dead. And it had signed Nietzsche. And then under it, someone had come with a bit of graffiti and wrote, Nietzsche is dead, signed God. So they have their ideas that God is dead, but ultimately Krishna says, Mrityu sarva harashcham, I will come as death and take everything away anyway. So you can have all your philosophies, but the reality is that when push comes to shove, when all is said and done, you also have to leave this world. And God, I wouldn't say has the last laugh, because God doesn't enjoy seeing people in this ignorance, but ultimately that's what will happen to you. That's the conclusion. So in this world, people have different warped ideas of God. They believe there's no God, but actually this is the purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement, to teach people that actually there is a God. There is a God. And to believe in a God is not something sentimental, is not something which is simply based on faith, but is something which is very rational, very logical, very scientific, which has great benefits for you as a person in terms of your own happiness in life, and which will ultimately lead to world peace. We've got half an hour. What I thought I'd discuss is three main arguments that I come across all the time, these like time and time again. It's amazing. Arguments don't change over the centuries. The same arguments against God come up again and again and again. And what we'll try to do today is explore three of the most common arguments that come up against God. And what we'll try to see is how these arguments are actually completely irrational, completely unreasonable, and are all in all completely quite unimpressive arguments to deny the existence of God. So that's what we'll try and do today, and let's see how far we get. The first argument that people always come up against in terms of denying God's existence is they say, we don't need God anymore because science has explained everything. Previously, when we weren't so advanced in our knowledge, we had to believe in a God so we could explain why this universe is here. We had to have that faith in a God. But now, through all of our research, we've actually understood everything. Where the universe came from, where life came from, where consciousness originates. We've understood all of these things, and basically, we don't need to refer to some imaginary God to explain all of these things anymore. You meet this all the time. You come across this all the time. Right? On an average day in book distribution, I'll meet at least 10 to 15 people who say this. Religion is just faith. God is evidence. Science is evidence. Science is factual. Science is empirical. We don't need to have this faith anymore. Of course, as I mentioned before, these theories of evolution and the Big Bang and all these great theories that we have in the world today are taught as undisputable fact. Okay, no one questions it. You're taught it. You know, one devotee who comes here, he's actually a teacher, and at the moment he has to teach all of his students Darwinian evolution. And you can understand how difficult it is for him, because he realizes, my God, this is completely wrong. So people think that these theories, they're undisputable. They've been proved. But actually, when you dig a little deeper, when you look a little closer, then you realize that these theories are actually on extremely shaky ground. There's so many holes in them that no sane person who has seen these deficiencies in the theory would accept it. I'm not going to go through the intricacies of every theory, but with evolution, basically the theory of Darwin is not complete in itself. There's so many missing links. In fact, all the evidence that they use to formulate the theory is a very, very small amount of evidence. It's said that over time what happens is 90 to 99% of the sedimentary rock, where they get all their archaeological evidence, what happens is erosion takes place. So 90 to 99% of the place where they're supposed to find all their archaeological findings, you can't even access that anymore because it's all undergone erosion. So the first thing with the evolution theory is that they're using a very, very small amount of evidence to base the theory on. Second thing is that the evidence itself is not complete because there's so many missing links. And the third thing, just to kind of put the cherry on the cake, is basically there's so many other pieces of evidence that have come to light which directly contradict evolutionary theory. If you read Druta Karmaprabhu's books, Forbidden Archaeology, you'll see how much anomalous evidence there is. Okay, so evolutionary theory says the modern human beings as we know it came about X amount of years ago, but there's so much evidence which shows that millions and millions of years prior to their dating of human man, there is so much evidence showing that they were dexterous beings who had full capabilities of humans as we know it. So evolutionary theory is extremely overrated. People think it's great, it explains everything, but actually it doesn't explain much. The Big Bang, I think even scientists have lost faith in the Big Bang. I don't know how many times that theory's changed over the last 100 years. But Big Bang, we say it's trouble from the start, the middle, to the end. Because the start, the scientists can't even explain, because even if you believe in a Big Bang, where did all the matter come from in the first place? Such a simple argument, they don't know. So it's trouble from the start, it's trouble in the middle because, okay, there was a Big Bang, but the problem is they can't actually say anything about that bang. You can never recreate such a thing in the laboratory, you can imagine. So they can't really say much about the event itself. And it's trouble at the end because how do they explain all the order and design that comes out after the bang? You can't explain it. Imagine imagine this big room was a big printing press with so much ink in here. And someone came in here and detonated a bomb. And coming flying out of this huge explosion came a lovely book like this, with wonderful words, an index which referred to different pages, which had even a bookmark and lovely pictures like this. I mean, you'd say, come on. Go back to the Wizard of Oz or wherever you come from, you know. I mean, this is ridiculous. So it's so simple. Prabhupada didn't get into... You see, Prabhupada's preaching was so amazing. He didn't get into the specifics of every theory. Because Prabhupada said, I'm not even going to get into specifics with you because the notion itself is so crazy. So if you look at this world with no predispositions, if you look at this world with no kind of idea in your head that I want to believe this or I don't want to believe this, if you just look at this world as a rational person, then you have to conclude there must be some intelligence behind it. You must. It's obvious. So, science has explained everything. I don't think so, unfortunately. They may have discovered many things. They may have made wonderful inventions, mobile phones and the internet and everything, and we give them due credit for that. But just because you've made a mobile phone or a great internet connection, it doesn't mean you can explain the origins of the universe and the biggest questions of life. That is a little far-fetched. So actually, Prabhupada always was establishing. And Krishna establishes in the Gita how Krishna consciousness is actually the supreme science. Religion is not a faith. It's not something, like I was on the street and then someone stopped me and they saw the books in my hand and they said, "Oh, so you're a man of faith." You know, like it's kind of like a subtle put down. "Oh, you're a man of faith. You know, you have faith in a God." I said, "Everyone has faith in this world. You have to have faith in something. You have faith in these ridiculous theories which don't prove anything. And I have faith in something which is a spiritual science." But the amazing thing about the Gita is that Krishna is not presenting a religion here. This is very interesting. Krishna is not presenting a religion. Krishna is presenting a spiritual science. And it's a full scientific experiment, the Bhagavad Gita. There's a hypothesis, there's an experiment, and then there's an observation. Like, I'll give you an example. Sometimes people say, "You can't see God. You can't see the soul. So you guys just have faith in it because you can't see God and you can't see the soul." But the problem is that they're using these eyes to see God. I'll give you another example. Imagine I came with a set of weighing scales. I said, "Here, Prashanatma, here's some weighing scales. Now with these weighing scales, I want you to measure the temperature in this room." You say, "You lost your mind?" Weighing scales measure the weight of something. They don't measure temperature. Okay? So weighing scales may be a scientific instrument, but you don't use it for measuring temperature. In other words, if I said to Prasanatma, "Prove to me that it's 20 degrees in this room and here's a set of scales," it wouldn't be a rational proposal because it's the wrong instrument. So similarly, Krishna says that don't try and see God with material eyes because it's the wrong instrument. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami says, "Ata Shri Krishna Namadi Na Bhavet Grayam Indriye." That Krishna, his form, his qualities, everything about God and the spiritual world, Na Bhavet Grayam Indriye, cannot be perceived with these senses. So if a scientist wants to see God with these eyes, it's as ridiculous as someone trying to measure temperature with a set of weighing scales, because it's the wrong instrument. Therefore, first thing Krishna says in the Gita is use the right instrument. It's the spiritual senses. And how do you spiritualize your senses? Sevan mukhe hi jivado svayam eva spuratyada. Devotional service which starts with the tongue. Chanting Krishna's names and taking Krishna prasadam. So this is a full experiment that Krishna is giving in the Gita. That you are a soul. There is a God, and you have a relationship with Him. That's the hypothesis. The experiment is engage in devotional service. Because Krishna says, "Bhakti mam abhijanati." If you engage in bhakti, you'll understand me. And then there's an observation. Krishna says to Arjuna in the Gita that if you practice devotional service, if someone practices devotional service, then they can see me face to face just as you are seeing me today. So, someone may say science can explain everything. We say, no, actually science hasn't explained everything. In fact, the Bhagavad Gita and the ancient scriptures are explaining everything. And when you actually practice this spiritual science, then you will understand that within yourself. You understand everything within yourself. Like, for example, Prabhupada gives the analogy that just as when the sun rises, you see yourself, you see others, and you see the world around you. Just as when that one activity takes place of the sun rising, then everything becomes clear. So similarly, when we understand God, when we understand Krishna, when that actually becomes a reality in our lives, then we understand everything. We understand who we are, we understand what the purpose of life is. We even understand why the things that are happening in the world are happening in the world, because we can understand everything as a plan of God like that. So like this, Krishna consciousness is actually the supreme science. And it's not just about faith, because faith is only the beginning. That is also explained in Madhurya Kadambini, Ado Shraddha First there must be faith, as there must be faith in anything in this world. But then, ado shraddha tata bhajana, tata sadhu sangha. So then there's sadhu sangha. Then there's bhajana kriya, engage in devotional service. Then there's anaita nivritti, clearing out the consciousness. And then there's nishta. And nishta means there's conviction. So in Krishna consciousness, it's not that we just have faith throughout our whole lives, and then at the end we just pray real hard that we did the right thing. You know, just practice devotional life, you know, give everything, and at the end just hope that you did the right thing. No, it's not like that. Because even in this life you can actually experience God. Because you can come to the point of nishta and beyond in this very life, and very quickly, according to your own seriousness. So when people say this, that, you know, science has explained everything and therefore we don't need God, you can immediately understand there's a very unimpressive argument, very irrational argument. The second major argument that people always come up with, I've seen, is or heard, is that they say, we can be happy without God. People who believe in God, they believe in God because there's something lacking in their life. They have to believe that there's some afterworld which is very perfect and everyone's all happy there and it's just a great situation. They have to believe in that, that there's something, because they're not happy in this world. But now we know how to be happy in this world. We've got technology, we've got entertainment, we've opened up everything, so there's opportunities for you to do anything you want to do. So we don't need to have God anymore. We're happy with our scientific knowledge and our scientific advancement. Again, this is not a very intelligent proposal. Shishi Radha Gokulananda ki, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki. Because if we look at the world we're living in, unfortunately people are not happy. In the ultimate, Krishna says, Janma Mrityu Jara Vyadi. In the ultimate sense, you will always experience certain things. Death, old age, disease that nobody wants. So in that way, everyone will always ultimately be defeated. But it's not only that you'll ultimately be defeated in your quest for happiness. In the interim, people are also becoming defeated on a daily basis, because the stringent laws of material nature mean adi devika, adi bhautika, and adi atmika, miseries are always there. So for all the scientific advancement and technological advancement, maybe it hasn't actually made people that much more happy. In fact, the LSE did a world happiness survey, multiple surveys. And what comes up time and time again when they try to measure which is the happiest country in the world, what comes up time and time again is the conclusion that those countries which have the most material facility, those countries which have the most technological advancement, those countries which have all the amenities and comforts that you could ever want, those countries are surprisingly, or not surprisingly, not the most happiest countries. Because happiness comes from something else. Like one time they asked Prabhupada, what is the purpose of Krishna consciousness? Bhagavata Sharipu said this. Very nice point Prabhupada makes. They said, what is the purpose of Krishna consciousness? Reporters asked Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, the purpose of Krishna consciousness is to enjoy. So, you know, like the reporters were a little, I mean, of all the things that he could have said, he said, just to enjoy. And then Prabhupada looked at the reporters and he goes, but you are so foolish, you don't know how to enjoy. You don't know how to have a good time. So this is the real, someone was telling me this, that there's a funny definition of a priest. A priest is a person who has a deep fear inside of them that someone, somewhere is having a good time. Right? People think religious people are like this. They don't want, you know, impose all the rules and regulations. Don't do this, don't do that, don't have a good time. But actually Prabhupada said, no, the purpose of Krishna consciousness is to enjoy. But Prabhupada said, you have to know how to enjoy. In other words, you have to know who you are. If you don't know who you are, how can you know how to enjoy? So this is just a very simple point. It's like, for example, if your car broke down and you needed to get a new part for the car, then in order to fix the car, you'd have to know something about your car. The model, the engine size, some kind of knowledge you have to have the car so you can get the right part. If someone has some illness and they have to get a blood transfusion, then in order for the blood transfusion to work and, you know, be successful, you have to know something about their blood type. So this is not a religious point that, you know, you can only be happy by religion. No. This is a very simple, logical point. If you want to be happy, then you have to know who you are. And when you know that you're a soul, and you try to pursue happiness through spiritual things, then you become happy. And Prabhupada always explained this and always impressed this upon the devotees. Like someone was saying this in 26 Second Avenue, very early on in the Krishna consciousness movement. Prabhupada was lecturing like this, and out there was all the hippies on the drugs. So one person right in the middle of the lecture kind of, in quite an abrupt way, just kind of jumped up and said, well, what's the spiritual world like then? You know, so Prabhupada was looking at all these hippies, you know, like half of them were on drugs and everything. And I mean, what was Prabhupada going to say? Well, the spiritual world, there's cows there, and, you know, there's cowherd where you run around. I mean, they may not have been able to relate to that. So Prabhupada just looked out and he saw all these hippies and he said, the spiritual world is like an ocean of LSD. And then they were all like, whoa, yeah, I want to go there, you know. So Prabhupada gave he was explaining that Krishna consciousness means the highest happiness. Happiness of this world is explained in the Bhagavatam, Sukham Hitucham. This is like the mantra, this mantra which is always going on my head when there's a material temptation. Sukham hitucham, very small happiness, very insignificant happiness. The happiness of enjoying the opposite sex, the happiness of getting some fame in this world, the happiness of having some control or power. Sukham hitucham, very small type of happiness compared to the anandam buddhivardhanam, the ocean of LSD as Prabhupada called it. Which is coming from spiritual happiness, from spiritual life. So, people may say that we don't need God to be happy, but if you look at the world today, unfortunately, there's a big emptiness within people. Just a couple of marathons ago, we were distributing in the Midlands, and it was amazing, 2 days in a row, I met two people who were going to commit suicide that very day, or at least they said. First day I was in Leicester, and one boy, he came to me, and the amazing thing is when I stopped him, he was well-dressed, he spoke very nicely, and for 5 minutes he was just telling me about his life, and then right in the middle, he just broke down. He started crying. You know, I'm a failure, I haven't achieved what I want to achieve in life, and then he became really, really disturbed, and he said, I'm going to end it, I'm going to end my life today. And he, you know, then he showed me an intoxication in his jacket, and he said, I'm just going to intoxicate myself, and that's it, game over, forget it, I don't want to carry on. So anyway, somehow we tried to explain that he took a book. But the very next day, amazingly, then the very next day we went to Nottingham. And in Nottingham again, right, we were just coming off the street, and right at the end of the day, again, someone came up to us. And again, he seemed like a normal person, very, like, well-spoken, very, you know, seemed fine. And after a few minutes, again, he started crying, broke down, and he said, I've committed some bad crime, the police are after me, and I just want to end it, you know, and I'm going to kill myself today. So I was with Jigga, and we were talking about it, and we came up with this phrase, smiling faces, crying hearts. When you walk on the street, people are all smiling and they seem to be very happy, very satisfied with their life. And sometimes when you're out there on the street and having a bad day, you think, maybe they seem happier than me. But actually, smiling faces, crying hearts. When you get beyond all of that superficial, in everyone's heart, to a greater or lesser degree, there is a certain amount of dissatisfaction because there's a spiritual void there. So people may say, we don't need God because we can be happy. But look at the world around you and you see that unfortunately that is not the case. And the third argument, which I mainly experience again and again, hear again and again, is the idea that the world would be a better place without God. Because at the end of the day, God creates division, religion creates tension. Just look at history, how many religious wars there were. When we get rid of God, when we get rid of religion and we just learn to respect each other as people, then the world will be a much better place, a much nicer place. It's quite interesting, the BBC did an audit. It was called the War Audit. And what they did is they looked at every single war in the past 100 years. In the past century. And the amazing findings of the war audit was that less than 10% of the wars in the last century had anything to do with religion. People always say religion causes war. The BBC did a war audit and found that less than 10% of the wars in the last century had some kind of religious foundation to it. Inevitably, what is creating war in this world is not religion. It may be so-called religious people, that may be there, but it's definitely not religion in its true sense. What is causing war and problems in the world is people's ultimately deep-rooted material desires. People's deep-rooted material desires mean they end up exploiting everyone else. And they can never be unified. Like Prabhupada went past the UN building and he said, they call this the United Nations. But every time I come past here, there's more and more flags. So in what sense have they become united? There's more flags. So people may, under some garb, under some kind of political adjustment, try to create unity and peace in the world, but it's not possible. Only when we have a spiritual perspective. Like Devamrita Maharaj gave this very nice story, and I tried to practice it. It works. I'll tell you what he did. One time he was walking in a university, and this kind of stop the war coalition kind of guy came out at him. And he gave Maharaj a flyer, and he said, there's thousands dying in Iraq. We got to do something. These people are dying. So Maharaj took the flyer and it was like a whole stop the war demonstration in Iraq. And Maharaj looked at this person and he said, what happens after death? So this person was a little taken aback. What happens after death? So after thinking for about 15, 20 seconds, he said, well, I mean, we just decompose into the ground. That's it. So he's saying, so what you're saying is that, what, we're all just chemicals and at the end of this life we just decompose back into the ground? The guy thought about it a bit more. He said, yeah, I mean, that's why. I mean, there's nothing after death, right? So then Maharaj looked at him and he said, so then, if you're chemicals, I'm chemicals, this is chemicals, everything's matter, then nothing matters. Then I can kill you, you can kill me, you know, we can chuck this out of the window, we can pour the Coke can down the sea and we can drown you at the same time, and it's all the same, because ultimately it's all just chemicals anyway. If everything is matter, then nothing matters. This is like mantra. If everything is matter, nothing matters. So this person was like, no, but, you know. He said, why? If you seriously believe that we're just chemicals, then there's no value. It's a complete devaluation of life. And so this kind of mechanistic philosophy, material approach to looking at other people as just chemicals, it doesn't do much for world peace. World peace comes about when we see other people as spiritual beings. As Krishna says in the Gita, Vidya Vinaya Shampanne, Brahmane Gavi Hastini, Sunni Chaiva Sapake Cha Pandita Samadarshina. The humble sage, by virtue of true knowledge, sees everyone as a spiritual being. And therefore the Vedic injunction is, Mahim Syat Sarva Bhutanam, don't commit violence to anyone. So spiritual people are actually humble, because they see everyone else as a spiritual being. It's amazing. Ever try to have an argument with a humble person? You can't do it. You can't do it. No matter how angry you are, if you're steaming, but the other person is humble, you can't have an argument. It's not possible. Because, so similarly, Krishna says, the humble sage, by virtue of true knowledge, sees everyone as a spiritual being. And when the world is filled up with those kind of humble, sagacious people who really understand that other people are spiritual beings, then you can have world peace. So, anyway, there's another argument which they say. So, it's not very convincing. The real way to world peace, as Krishna says, is Bhoktaram Yajna Tapasyam, given in the fifth chapter. Understand God, understand yourself, see everyone as a spiritual being, then it will create peace in the world. So basically, Prabhupada, there's so much scope in the world to teach Krishna consciousness in a rational way. We don't have to go out on the street and kind of incite fear within people that if you don't believe in God, then that's it, you're going to burn in it. We don't need to resort to those kind of tactics, because the Bhagavad Gita is so complete that there's so much logical basis to believing in God. It's just such a rational choice that any person with half a brain will actually look at it seriously and consider it. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to present Krishna consciousness in a very logical, rational way so that people will use their intelligence and accept it. Like there's a famous American psychologist, his name was William James. And he said that, he talked about something called live options. Interesting concept, he said, live options. Basically what he was saying is that you have many options in life, but certain things are live options. And if you do not consider a live option with some intelligence and think about it before you reject it or accept it, then you would be a very irrational person. I'll give you an example to explain this. Say I said, okay, Prasanatma, go out to the car park, do cartwheels, and with a sledgehammer, smash every windscreen in the car park. It's an option. You could do it, right? But you wouldn't really do it, because what's the perceived benefit? There's no real benefit in that. What's the practicality of doing it? Can you do it without anything bad happening? Probably not, because the police will probably be down here in 10 minutes. And what is the probability of it bearing fruit? I mean, has anyone else done it previously? Have you seen anything good come out of such a thing? No. So therefore, it's an option, but it's not a live option. William James said that if there's a perceived benefit in something, if that thing is also practically something that someone can apply, and if there's a great probability that it will bear fruit, if something has those three characteristics, it's a live option. And for someone to reject such a thing without due consideration would be irrational. So if you think about the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is offering an amazing benefit, unending, eternal, spiritual happiness. Great benefit. Is it practical? Can you apply it in your life? Yeah, you don't have to change anything. You just add a few things. Is anything bad going to come as an immediate result of it? No. And three, there's great probability because so many people have already done it in their lives and are experiencing that. So therefore, the Bhagavad Gita is a live option. And therefore, at the end of the Gita, Krishna, this is what Krishna says to Arjuna. This is brilliant. I'll end on this point. This is a brilliant explanation of Krishna. Explanation of who Krishna is. Krishna, right at the end of the Gita, says to Arjuna, Iti te jnanam akhyatam, guyat guyataram maya, vimrasheta dasheshena yatejasi tathaguru. Krishna says, right at the end of the Gita to Arjuna, Iti te jnanam akhyatam, I've given you this knowledge. Guyat guyataram maya is very amazing knowledge, very deep knowledge. But then Krishna says to Arjuna, vimrasheta dasheshena, think about it. See if it makes sense. Question it. Analyze it. And then he says to Arjuna, yatechasi tathaguru, and then do what you want to do. So when we teach Krishna consciousness like this to people in a very logical way, say, here, these are all the facts. You look at it. You're an intelligent person. See if it makes any sense, and then do what you want to do. In that way, people will come. And that's what Prabhupada did. Prabhupada never scared anyone. He didn't say, you know, it says in Bhagavad Gita that you must surrender. And, you know, you wouldn't say that to a new person. He would just explain it logically. So if we do that, that is a great benefit in our own life and in the lives of many others. And as Arjuna says in the Gita also, the result of this, accepting Krishna consciousness in such a logical, rational way, Arjuna says, Nashta moha smriti labdha. My illusion has gone. Smriti labdha, I've regained my memory. Tvat prasadat mayachyuta, this has been possible by your mercy. Stito smi gata sandeha, all my doubts are eradicated. Karishye vachanam tava, and I'm ready to act according to your instruction. And by doing that, Arjuna is experiencing the deepest type of happiness. So this is what we tried to discuss today, how God is actually a rational choice. How science may claim to have all the answers, but unfortunately when you dig a little deeper, they don't. And how if we can present Krishna consciousness to others in this logical, rational way, then it will bear fruit and it will be successful. So thank you for your time and patience. I think we're running out of time, so I won't ask for questions.